Welcome to the nationally syndicated In the Oil Patch radio show with Kim Bilotto, broadcasting from the Port of Corpus Christi studios. Get more on the Port of Corpus Christi at portofcc.com. In the Oil Patch radio show will give you an inside look at the oil, gas, and energy industry and how it affects you from industry experts and government officials right here on the In the Oil Patch radio show.
And now it's time for me to welcome on my guest, Karen Baumer, who is the Vice President of Offering and Strategy for ABB Energy. Karen, welcome to In the Oil Patch radio show.
Thank you for having me.
So now I want to talk a little bit today about CERAWeek, because we did run into ABB at CERAWeek. You guys were in the Angora pod, and I want to talk a little bit about that further on in the show and talk a little bit about your overall thoughts of what was going on in CERAWeek and talk about the energy transition. But first, before we get started with that, let's introduce you to our listeners. Karen, tell us a little bit about your background, and also for the listeners who are not familiar with ABB Energy, tell us a little bit about that too.
Great. So ABB Energy Industries is one of the divisions within ABB. We're focused on automating, electrifying, and digitizing some of the world's largest industries. Really focused on oil and gas, chemical refining, water, wastewater, and new energies that are part of the energy transition. And a little bit about me, I actually recently joined ABB Energy Industries about a year ago, and I am passionate about the energy transition and really focused on what can be done from a technology standpoint, so from a development innovation standpoint, and actually bringing to market solutions that are solving our customers' challenges, focused on delivering value that helps our customers in their own journey through technology, through thinking about things a bit differently, and functioning as an advisor as well as a partner.
Well, I think we have been covering CERAWeek for about 5 years now, the radio show, and conducting interviews live from there as well as even after the fact. And the Angora pods, to me, have always been so impressive. Part of it is because it really displays the most cutting-edge technologies that are being used in the energy industry. And this year was absolutely mind-boggling with all of the new innovations when we speak of the transition, which, again, I promise our listeners we will get into in the show. But in the Angora pods, you guys always have a very nice display, very large room, a lot of information in there, very impressive. So tell us a little bit about your pod. What was the theme? What were you guys going for? What was on display for ABB?
Yeah, so at ABB and the Agora Hall, if you will, more than just a pod, we had emphasis on really four topics. First was digital. Digital and for industrial software has a huge part in energy transition. It also has a huge part to play in our traditional markets. So how can you not only gather data, but be predictive? How can you focus on avoidance of emissions or increase in productivity? So number one was digital. Number two, like most other attendees, CCS is part of it. So carbon capture solutions is part of our story. It's part of many people's stories. So really that focus on avoidance of carbon emissions. The third would be a presence in hydrogen. I think there were every color of the rainbow in hydrogen. We are clear participants in blue hydrogen. We are active participants in green hydrogen. And there was a lot of focus there, and we were part of the story unfolding. And then the fourth focus in Agora was some of the emphasis on workforce and the changing diversity of energy as a sector, the energy sector demographics. And so those were the four areas where we were focused in
You mentioned the core, and my next question was going to be, what was your sense of CERAWeek? And I heard you say you're fairly new to ABB, but we've been covering it for 5 years now, and it's always exciting, always very cutting edge. A lot of times it focused a lot on geopolitical, which it still did. But it seemed to me the overarching theme over everything else, which is kind of crazy when you think about all the different countries, and you've got invasions going on, and of course it affects the oil supply. You've got all kinds of things breaking out all over the world, and yet that didn't quite seem to hit the very top of CERAWeek as far as what was going to be covered. It was truly this transition. And the four things that you're in the pod covered in Angora was the main topics of that. And so that pretty much was the overall arching theme. Would you not agree? Was there anything outside of that that caught your attention, that like something, I did not know that. And I find that a lot at CERAWeek. It's like, wow, I did not know that. But my job is to report on these things because it's happening so fast.
It
Transition.
is. Yeah. So, yours, your fifth coverage is actually only my second time attending. And I would say this year, it was what we call the and equation. So, last year, I felt like it was a little bit the or. Like, we have to go towards everything from now on is going to be completely low carbon. And I felt And nothing else is going to sustain. And I think that what I got from CERAWeek is the and. So we have the traditional, which we need to decarbonize, but it's and the investment and energy transition, which might be zero carbon emissions. And so I actually talked with several of my coworkers. I talked with other people in the industry, and much like you, it didn't seem like a specific agenda this year at CERAWeek. It was more of the, we got to explore everything, because I think there's this realization that no one can figure it out on their own. Like, we're going to have to take this journey together, and it's an and equation.
And it's so very eye-opening. That I was trying to find the right word, but eye-opening to me that you use the word that no one can do it together, and we must, try to work through this. So as we discuss energy transition, and Karen, our show is just mainstream radio syndicated, so a lot of people listen to the show from all walks of life. I think most people do understand that we have a transition going on. I think they do support that we have. Climate change is real, and we need to start, figuring out how to make these turns. The thing, though, that is amazing to me is how they don't really think about how these changes are going to have to come in a pattern that slowly makes a change, some faster than others, but the change has got to occur simultaneously with oil and gas and other products that we still need before we can just get off. And I see sometimes there's a lot of misunderstanding on how this transition has to finally start making that turn, but reasonable turns. Otherwise, we have chaos. And so that's kind of the heart of what we're going to talk about today on the show. But a lot of the times, like hydrogen right now, it's been around, but it's new again. People are hearing it. And now there's questions on the other side challenging. The safety of it, but there isn't any safety fuel that's without some type of potential. That's what all of them have is a potential, but you can't exactly stop using energy either. So we have to look at things reasonably and figure these things out together. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So let's begin with how growing dependence on energy. It's evolving. We're seeing that energy companies are definitely trying to make this transition in trying to achieve the goals of reducing emissions and achieving net zero. My question is, so what is the stance of ABB Energy? How do you guys basically talk to your customer base of helping them achieve this? I mean, it can't just be a quick decision, it's got to probably be this really long, thought-out process of how do they make these transitions in a meaningful way, but one that also doesn't break their bank and doesn't also cause too much havoc as they're making these transitions. So how do you think, or what is your counseling to your customer base on how are they going to achieve this, but also keeping up with the energy demands?
So I think there are probably three or four questions in that one question.
Yeah, I typically do that. Sorry about that. Take which one you want. I'll come back around on the others.
Or I'll try to remember them and we'll just go layer by layer. I think the first thing is to talk about the affordability of energy. And you touched on that. We as a society, and it's not just in developed countries, it's all over the world, have become completely dependent on energy. And yet we want it cheap. We want it affordable. So, there's this belief. Some people say, well, let's go to solar. The sun is free. Well, that's true, but in order, it only is sunny in some parts of the world. And to harvest that energy is a very expensive process. And when you start looking at the cost to do something like that, it may or may not be affordable anymore. So affordable energy for all areas of the world is super important. And then you asked about the guidance or how do you help customers, our customers, transition into something, and that becomes wildly complex very, very quickly. So you have to think about we've used fossil fuels for energy supply for more than 100 years. And now all of a sudden we want to change the way we get our energy in less than 20 years. And technology advances, but it doesn't really advance that quickly because there are evolutions that have to take place. And you can't just take a certain plant or factory and flip it to something. So you can, the goal is always, hey, can we leverage our infrastructure. So if that's what the customer wants, we evaluate that. Sometimes that makes sense and sometimes it doesn't make sense. Also, but the bigger challenge is as our customers move towards low carbon solutions and transition, they can't stop the supply of traditional energy sources in order to go build something else to supply energy. And
That's
I think
correct.
that this is something that as a general population gets lost. And I'm not sure why, but there needs to be an awareness that you can't
Correct.
just stop.
That's correct, Karen. I agree with that. And I'm going to make a statement when we come back from break. Let's take a quick break. You're listening to In the Oil Patch Radio Show. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to In the Oil Patch Radio Show. My guest today is Karen Baumer, who is the VP of ABB Energy. Karen, before the break, we were discussing ABB Energy's stance on trying to help y'all's customer base make the transition from not walking away, probably totally from energy, whatever their energy was before they started their transition, but to evolve their portfolio to be a little bit more well-rounded with a lot of different energy sources, clean energy as well, that's included as they're making a transition. And before the, right before we went to break, you said, I'm not really sure why we're not getting the message that it's a transition. And I know I'm kind of paraphrasing what you said, but I really believe that a lot needs to be held accountable in how our elected officials and people in leadership roles dole this out. And I mean this in the way, not just our elected officials, but also advocates that support green energy that want to see us move in these directions. This is great, and we need to be informed on it. But when we say things that are somewhat maybe reckless of like, we need to get off now, that's kind of impossible. So I think with a higher understanding that we need to really educate the masses that this is going to be a transition, not an easy fix, not a tomorrow we, pull a lever and we have figured out how to deal with climate change. And so that's kind of something that I wanted to hit on of what my belief and something that really does bother me a lot is how leaders should be more effective in their discussions on explaining these are going to be transitions, folks. But let's go back because I kind of cut you off. So the energy demand is on the rise, right? And how does companies, you mentioned earlier that your company tries to help them make that transition, but in an affordable way, while they're also reducing their carbon footprint or are trying to achieve their net zero goals. Can you drill down a little bit more? How do they do this without compromising, but yet continuing to reach their air emissions goal, but not breaking the bank, if you will? Are there any examples that you have of some of the things that have worked with some of the customers?
That's a good question. I'm not going to be able to talk specifically about customers, but you touched on the two things that weigh heavy on the minds, which is energy supply and affordable energy. And so there are many routes to do it. And I know the answer, it depends, is often not always well received, but it absolutely depends. It depends on if our customers that supply energy to the public, if they are choosing to form a company within a company, and that company within a company is therefore tasked to go determine the best way to tackle energy transition, and that can be through clean energies, that can be through decarbonization of existing energies. Other solutions are, companies expand and they expand to different parts of the world, and sometimes there's evaluations that are done and what their expansions are. What ABB is able to support and deliver is these complex methods of delivering energy are automated, and our automation solutions actually help it increase the time to deliver. And for some of the really complex environments that are not safe for humans to be in, we actually remove the human element and we automate, which over time also re produces that reliability that our customers want to provide to the public. So there's not a specific customer I can talk about and share exactly what they're doing. Those are things that you would need to talk to those customers themselves. But there are many paths to delivery, and each company or each customer is figuring out what is the best path for them.
You mentioned that in your Angora pods that there were four pillars that you guys focused on. And it does really flow well with the transition because I think when people really think about the transition, they do think about, oh, I know what that means. That's solar and that's wind and that's going to be hydrogen. They're familiar with the words and the product. But there, behind the scenes, one of the pillars that you were discussing right now that you all had at CERAWeek is how automation is also lowering emissions and their carbon footprint by using less energy as well, even if it's still in the form of oil and gas. As an example, the oil and gas industry as a whole has been lowering their air emissions for quite some time, a couple of years, and it's very low considered to what it had been in the past. And a lot of that has been utilizing the technologies that are available, not so much because they've moved to solar or wind. It's they're able to do and find greener ways of also pulling from oil and gas, but in a cleaner way. Is that something that ABB Energy also helps and looks at in the way of looking and utilizing technology to help combat our climate change issues and situations?
Absolutely. So, in a couple of different ways. So, CCS is carbon capture solutions. And so, this is actually capturing the carbon that can be released from fossil fuels and putting it back in where it came from. And there are a couple of places where you can capture the carbon. You can capture the carbon once it's been emitted, and you can capture it from the atmosphere, or you can capture it at the source. I think both are very promising, but and there's not necessarily one is better than the other. They're both being developed real time. And there are different ways to understand at what point you capture carbon. And one thing that came in, if there were a sub theme at CERAWeek, it was there was a lot of talk about digital twins. So a digital twin is actually a replica of the automation equipment or a replica of the process. And so it can be predictive. If there is a part of the automation process where there could be a compromise of anything, any sort of emissions or compromise of anything in the workflow, it can predict when it's going to happen. So you can be proactive and avoid it.
That's
And
right.
digital twins have been around for a number of years.
I know. We've done a lot of coverage on the shows in the past on that specific topic. And I feel when I look back, we were a little ahead of our time,
A little.
kind of understanding how important it would be. Let's take a quick break, Carol. When we return, I want to get back on that topic and I want to move to the different types of heavy industry infrastructure versus what they're looking at when we're talking about how do they make transitions as well. You're
Sounds
listening
good.
to the Oil Patch Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Attention small and medium-sized business owners. Are you feeling overwhelmed with back office tasks like payroll, workers' compensation, federal regulations, safety laws, employment standards, and benefits? Don't worry, Unique HR has your back. For over 30 years, our team of qualified professionals has been providing people-centered solutions to help businesses like yours navigate the heavy burden of running a business and managing their workforce. We're the PEO with a pulse, and we are just a phone call away. Call us today at 361-852-6392. Unique HR, the partner you can trust.
And we're back. You're listening to in the Oil Patch Radio Show. My guest today is Karen Baumer, who is a Senior Vice President of ABB Energy. Karen, before the break, you touched on a topic about what is known as a digital twin tower.
Yeah, so digital twins, you're right. Before the break, they've been around for a while, and they've actually been around in industries other than the energy sector. And I think the timing is right now, as there is, as you said, a scaling and an emphasis on lower emissions from traditional energy sources, oil and gas, even some chemical and refining. And there's a maturity that's now happened where it is best to be predictive and be proactive, and a digital twin can enable that. They've been around for many years, but they've also improved over the years. So I feel like this is a point of inflection. Just like any technology, sometimes it's talked about for a while before it actually gets implemented. But when you think about understanding the point at where carbon and other emissions could occur and capturing it there or even prevent it, that also cuts down on operational cost further downstream. You think about corrosion, you think about failed parts, you think about different readings that have to come out. So the digital twin, while it's technology is an investment, and then there's training, the timing is right to really implement.
You know, if I remember correctly, going back, I think one of the shows was discussing, and this doesn't necessarily have a lot to do with reducing emissions and net zero, but it does in the way of efficiency and how it affects us when we do have a main refinery that is down and is out of production for a while. They're producing a lot for the consumer, how it has an impact downstream on us and our pocketbooks potentially. So these are pretty important things to look at in the way of efficiency as well. And I remember doing a show on that because a lot of our refineries are so old. We haven't really built any new refineries. So as they are really getting older, it's important that they're using technology to replace parts before they really have a problem. Kind of like your vehicle, right? Like you
Right.
don't want to drive your vehicle until it just breaks down. You want to pay attention to the sensors that are coming off, and that's typically what's happening with these digital towers. Let's switch gears though and talk a little bit about the importance of the energy transition, given its unique requirements in the different energy systems versus heavy energy infrastructure. So my last discussion right now was about refineries, which would be the heavy industry infrastructure, some of that, but energy is not just that. It's so massive. So talk to me about that. How do How do they approach energy transition when they're so different?
Right. So, the heavy industries that we serve are the oil and gas industry, the chemical and refining industry, and then within chemicals, different forms of petrochemicals, specialty chemicals. You think about different forms of refineries, fertilizer production, et cetera, et cetera. So you're talking energy transition. Energy transition is the journey, but some people think of energy transition as a certain set of energy technology and industries. You might hear them called new industries. It's still evolving. Certainly renewables are part of that. Battery and battery storage is part of that. But then there are also other new industries that are looking to be automated, just like the heavy industries. The main difference, though, is some of these heavy industries are still process intense, requiring us the automation, electrification, digitization, and they are complex structure. I talked about them being around for 100 years or so. You talked about refineries being around for decades. This is true. One reason they're there is they want massive financial investments. They typically have a very large footprint, and they have millions of people relying on. And we think about these new industries that are not yet fully developed. They will eventually get to scale, but one thing is for sure, they are far less complex. They are streamlined and possibly don't have the infrastructure that these heavy industries have. And that's mostly because the science is showing that there are fewer steps that have to go through in order to harvest the energy. So these are different differences. I think the thing that sometimes gets lost, though, is some of these new industries require elements of the heavy industry. You have to build a facility that's steel, that's cement. These are things that take immense energy to produce. So this is also where you come back to the and equation. It's not an or, because some of these new industries and the energy transition certainly emit less, less greenhouse gases, or no, it could be zero. But the cost to build that, the output to build that, is directly tied into the traditional energy sources.
Very good. Let's take a quick break. You're listening to In the Oil Patch Radio Show. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to In the Oil Patch Radio Show. My guest today is Karen Baumer, who is Vice President of ABB Energy. Karen, before the break, you were talking to us about how the industry has been evolving in the way of energy transition, digitalization, automation. Let's talk about the skill sets, though. I was reading a grant the other day coming out from the EPA, and it was kind of shocking to me that we have all this grant money going out, and in the IRA money going out for all of these solar and wind projects, and but yet it seems like our educational opportunities lack because we really don't have a model that the universities and colleges are using, university or two-year colleges, trade schools are using in the way of doing certifications or getting certifications. I'm not saying that's for everyone, but the grant was basically asking for actual classroom training, learning on these things. And I was like, wow, you talk about the horses way before the cart. If now we're looking for grants, or there's grants available for educators to put these programs together. And I'm wondering what it's going to be the new skill set for that's going to be essential for these digitalization and automation, excuse me, businesses.
So great question. I'm not an expert on what curriculum should be and how grant money should be used for the training, but I can give you a very simple analogy that's outside of the energy sector. And that is something that I've experienced in my lifetime with regards to balancing a checkbook. My parents balance a checkbook every month. They've done it for decades. It's what they know how to do. It works. They get a bank statement, they go through their expenses, their additions, and they get a balanced checkbook. You ask anybody who's been using digital banking for the last 10 years, they probably haven't balanced a checkbook in 5 or 10 years. And yet they know they get to the same number. Manually balancing your checkbook, it works, it's not broken. You get to the same number. You can do online banking and you know instantly what your balance is. You don't have to wait 30 days for that statement to come. Digital banking is in your hands. It's immediate. And there's an entire generation that has never even been taught how to balance a checkbook. I think the digitization within the energy sector is no different. There is a workforce that knows the existing technologies. It's not broken, it works, it's reliable, and you supply energy. Now, those systems are being digitized, and there is a new skill set in order to do it. And I think everybody has the opportunity to learn it, whether someone chooses to learn it or not, is their decision. But there is a generation where the learning curve is going to be much faster, and they're going to come into the workforce or already in the workforce, and they have a completely different skill set. And when we think about the energy supply, what have we said? You and I both have said it during the call. Affordability and reliability and digitization is going to get us both of those at a much faster speed because you've said a couple of times about the consumption of energy is actually increasing. And I 100% agree with it. I work with two monitors, sorry, three monitors and two cell phones. I'm consuming more energy. And so there's this generation with a new skill set, but they are also the ones consuming more energy. So we're coming into this kind of inflection point that yes, people do need to be taught, but there also needs to be an open mind from the existing workforce to learn.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because I don't remember anybody bringing up the old way we would balance a checkbook, and I'm much older than you. But it is strange that now I can go online, open my bank statement, and I know what's in there, and it shows what's going to go through. And there really isn't a need to balance the checkbook anymore the way you can just look at it, and you know what you've put out there, and you can look at your phone, you see what you've charged. There's just it's instant and rapid ability to look and see where you are versus the old way of doing things. That is so, I don't know, like just a moment of, wow, am I really that old? But I am.
I also 5 years ago, I was balancing the checkbook and I had friends saying, "Karen, you gotta be kidding me."
Yeah, get with the time.
And then,
So.
there can be mistakes. Well, yeah, there could be mistakes, but if you have it instantly, you're going to know the mistake faster than waiting 30 days for your statement. And
That's right. That's right. Remember when you made a mistake and you didn't know it, and back then it would have a train wreck on all the other checks that you wrote, and now you have overdraft fees on top of overdraft fees on top of overdraft fees. Thank goodness we're not at that same time window anymore. So let's talk about let's keep on the topic of talent. But it seems like the younger generation, they want to be part of the energy transition for climate change cause. So they want to, I think, be trained career talent that has passion and has the desire to make real change. How do they do that? How do we attract these young kids?
that is a great question, and I don't have the answer, and I don't think anybody at ABB has the answer, but we have experienced it. So they want to be part of energy transition. They want to do all the right things, protect the earth. Climate change is real, but they only want to work on the new stuff. And if you were at CERAWeek, you can read any publication, you can see the news. Fossil fuels are going to be around. They're going to be around in my lifetime, and they will be around in the lifetime of the young talent. The challenge we face, and others face it too, is in order to get to the energy transition and the new technologies, you need to understand what's here now and the use of fossil fuels. And there's some young talent that they don't want to work for companies that touch that. Well, the whole world is touching fossil fuels. So there is the need to attract young talent before we can talk about skill sets, because there might be young talent with the right skill sets. We need to attract them to come work for ABB, or our customers need to attract them to go work for them in order to make this difference. As far as skill sets, I don't have a prescription for that. I only have advice, and that advice is to be open-minded and innovative and not rule anything out because of personal beliefs. I think ruling things out prematurely is going to slow down the energy transition. But say we have a young talent or talents, I think that what we can do is embrace them into the way things are done, and then lean on them to teach us new skills in order to go faster.
Well, I think the whole thing would be, we're going to take a quick break, but I think if the young people really see, if you want to see real climate change and you want to be a part of the change in making this happen to save the planet or wherever their stance is, depending on how they really look at things, it's going to require you to get on board because you're the young talent that we need. So, let's take a quick break. You're listening to an Oil Patch Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Hey, when you're in business, you have to make a lot of tough choices. So let's talk about an easy one, your workers' comp coverage. If you're a propane or butane dealer or operator, you need to join the Lone Star Energy Safety Group through Texas Mutual Insurance Company. As a member, you'll automatically get a discount on your premium, plus you can earn double dividends that'll go straight into your pocket. It's the easiest decision you'll ever make. Find out more at texasmutual.com/Lone Star Energy.
And we're back. You're listening to in the Oil Patch Radio Show. My guest today is Karen Baumer, who is the Vice President of ABB Energy. Karen, as we, CERAWeek produced by S&P Global, it's like the, I find it the red carpet of oil and gas in the way of not awards or fancy people, but there are very important people. But I mean it in the way, the red carpet, in the way like the most important people are at CERAWeek, and the most important technologies and the future of the world is coming to CERAWeek to speak. There were Bill Gates was there, the Department of Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm was there, John Podesta was there. Those are some of the elected officials, but the to see all of the new stuff that's coming on board when you we talk about hydrogen, carbon capture, you name it, net zero, it was there on display. But along with all of these important people, there were all different countries as well. We met people from Japan, Saudi Arabia, I mean, you name it. And so since ABB Energy is a global company, I guess I wonder your thoughts of how, as you are dealing with your customer base, the countries that are outside the United States, every country is on a different path, but we know Europe tends to be very wanting to look at green technology. United States, where are we versus other countries as well? What are the differences that you're seeing between the different countries, and how are you able to switch gears of like, okay, the United States wants to stay here and Europe wants to stay there and Japan wants to be here? Give me some thoughts on how are we as a world doing in our energy transition?
So I love this question, and it's also one reason I love being at ABB, because it is a global company and every country is on their own journey. And there are some massive generalizations, and I'll make a quick generalization between the United States and Europe, and like just Europe as a whole, not necessarily divided into regions. But the United States is saying, I don't want to limit supply of energy. I'd rather keep the supply going high and find a way to decarbonize. Whereas in Europe, as a general rule, you could call it green, but they are looking to reduce supply by reducing demand, meaning lights cut off, or there's a restriction on using heating or air conditioning, or many countries don't have outside seating in the winter because they don't have propane tanks because the propane heat emits. You would never see that in the United States. So Europe in general is trying to reduce demand and reduce supply. North America is, they keep supply high, keep demand high. I don't know which is right. I don't think anybody knows which is right, but I don't think any approach is wrong. We just need to find the right approach. And so both the Europe and North America, we are very developed regions. I think if you think globally, there are huge differences with sub-Saharan regions, some of the Asian regions. And I'm going to just make a very quick analogy. I like analogies. I mean, one size does not fit all. The US and Europe, we have these massive infrastructures. Our worlds have been created on infrastructure, the combustion engine, transportation, large buildings. Both Europe and North America are rich in natural resources. We have the Gulf, they have the North Sea, both regions have solar, both regions have hydro. I mean, really big, but a sub-Saharan region, they don't have the infrastructure. And so I think about this analogy that 25 years ago, when cell phone usage in the United States started to become more abundant, I remember I gave up my land 8 years ago, 9 years ago, but it was this transition. And it took a very long time because we had this infrastructure of landlines and we couldn't quite switch to mobility. We didn't have cell towers, et cetera, et cetera. You look at what happened in Asia. There was very few landlines. It was expensive. There were a lot of people in the house trying to share a landline. Mobile phones came out. There was adoption immediately because there was no infrastructure. In fact, Asia was further adopting cell phones faster than we could in North America. Well, I don't think that this is any different with energy transition. If you look at sub-Saharan regions, they don't have an infrastructure. They will likely leapfrog directly to some new energies, just like the kind of in Asia, they leapfrogged into cell phones much faster than we did. I share this because it reiterates that there's no one size that fits all. The important thing when you think about climate change is that we're all moving in the right direction. We all are making progress. And when something does work, that progress is shared.
That is a great ending to the show, Karen, because I say this a lot on the show, and it is pretty much built around we live on, as we, it's okay to disagree on what the path forward is on energy transition. As long as we keep in mind that we all live in on one, it's the planet that's facing climate change. And so as we look at this, I think sometimes some countries get passed over, some countries get villainized. And at the end of the day, it's really going to be so you've got one country doing 100% green. That's great. What are we going to do on the other side of the world where we've got some really large polluters and they really can't help it? Because it's, they need access to energy for survival. And so it's a complicated topic. It's a really complicated topic, and I think it's going to take time for us to evolve into whatever, and it won't be one size fits all, like you said. It'll be multiple different things. And heck, for all I know, it might not even look anything like what we're seeing right now in the future. But I definitely think that it's exciting. I was very happy to see CERAWeek was, the year before, I think the train was leaving the station and now it's gone. We're in transition in so many different ways. So it'll be really interesting to see what the future holds. But I want to thank you for coming on ABB Energy. ABB, blah, ABB Energy. Thank you for coming on, Karen, telling us what you guys are working on. And I look forward to having you back on the show anytime you want to come back and tell us something that's going on that's newsworthy. Please be sure to let us know. Where does our listeners go if they want some information on ABB Energy?
So ABB.com, and you just search for the energy industries tab.
Perfect. Thank you, Karen, for joining us again. We look forward to having you back on the show in the future.
Thank you.
In the Oil Patch is where, together, we explore topics that affect us all in oil, gas, business, and in your community. Every week, your host, Kim Bellotto, will visit with the movers and shakers in this fast-paced industry. You'll hear from industry experts, elected officials, and many more right here on In the Oil Patch.
Farmers and ranchers are the hardest-working people on Earth and deserve a side-by-side vehicle that works just as hard. That's why Yamaha makes the Viking and all-new Viking 6, the world's first true 3- and 6-person UTVs assembled in America. Ranked number one in drivetrain durability, Viking outworks and outclasses the competition in features, comfort, and off-road capability. For more, visit YamahaViking.com. Most dependable claim based on a 2013 Yamaha Source side-by-side owner study.